Hallo, schön, dass ihr wieder zu Democratize Work eingeschaltet habt. Zu Beginn ein kleiner Hinweis.
Hi and welcome to our podcast. Before we start, a little note. This episode consists of two parts and will be in English, but as most of our previous episodes were in German, a little explanation for our German-speaking listeners.
Dies ist der zweite Teil einer zweiteiligen Episode, der Episode 20, die wir auf Englisch aufgenommen haben. Mit Gabriela vom Gorillas Workers Collective und dem Soziologen Moritz Altenried haben wir im ersten Teil über den Zusammenhang von Migration und Plattformarbeit gesprochen. Ja, und heute geht es vor allem um das Organizing bei Gorillas und andernorts in der Plattformökonomie. Außerdem geht es um mögliche Schritte, die Gewerkschaften dabei helfen könnten, mehr Gegenmacht in der Plattformökonomie aufzubauen. Natürlich ist uns klar, dass einige von euch lieber Inhalte auf Deutsch zu sich nehmen. Deshalb haben wir eine deutsche Übersetzung in Textform angefertigt. Schaut dazu einfach in die Shownotes. Ab Oktober hört ihr uns dann wieder wie gewohnt in deutscher Sprache. Aber jetzt geht's erstmal los mit dem zweiten Teil von Episode 20. Who shapes your work and your working conditions?
Who decides what we produce?
Democratize Work, a podcast about democracy and labor.
I'm Johanna Lauber.
And my name is Felix Nickel.
Once a month, we talk with researchers and workers about their experiences and ideas regarding democracy in a changing world of work.
Today, with the second half of our talk about migrant labor and the platform economy and organizing efforts in this field. Yeah, welcome back to the second half of our talk with Gabriela, who's part of the Gorillas Workers Collective in Berlin, and Moritz Altenried, postdoc researcher at the Berlin Institute of Empirical Migration Research. So whereas the focus of our first part of the talk was mainly centered around understanding the connections between platform labor and migrant labor, we will today look more into the experiences and practices of organizing in the platform economy. So without further ado, let's get started. Gabriela, you're part of the Gorillas Workers Collective and you were involved in the labor struggle at the grocery delivery platform company. I would like to understand more about how it all started. So what ignited your struggle and led to the formation of the Gorillas Workers Collective?
Yeah, I think we Moritz mentioned it was the very low wage, the precarity of the bikes and the worker equipment. And well, I when I joined on the 16th of February 2021, there was a heavy storm, and all the other delivery workers like Lieferando, Bolt, they all ceased operations during that week for certain days, but Gorillas didn't. So there was some writing a letter from a few colleagues, like we will say the beginning of the collective, in where all these points were kind of mentioned, obviously. There was a reply, I think, a month after somehow. But yeah, but the first strike, I would say, it happened during this time. My colleagues basically did a Zurückbehaltungsrecht and just decided to stop working on these really extreme weather conditions that could lead to many, many accidents and so on. I think, yeah, that was the start. And then around June, more into the summer, there were a series of just firings and this, like, determinations. And one of them was, like, I don't know, it was just a colleague. I don't think he was even part of our group or anything, but we did a big noise and stopped operations in two warehouses. And it was just organized with the group that we were at the moment. We were just very angry and we really wanted to do something about it because there was nothing happening. And we knew that nothing will happen if we rely on management and they're just not really listening, obviously, and they serve their own interests and not the interests of the workers. I think it got really, really nice and really beautiful at the moment. We got a lot of support, obviously, from other groups. And this also really, really helped to connect with other people and to other workers also then start meeting more Lieferando riders and realizing, hey, well, it's not just us. It's just the whole thing that is basically the same. And this also gives you power, of course, to know that you have other workers that want to fight for the same, basically. Yeah, I think we didn't really know what we were doing so much. but I think it's been great because it's out there and people talk about it. We have now a podcast, for example, that we've been talking about it and so on. It's out there and there is more information and we can say that hopefully there is less and less of this because of these groups or of organized workers that inform their colleagues about their rights, basically. At the end of the day, I think that's the main strength that we have as organizers, you know, like to pass this knowledge on and yeah.
Mm, yeah, of course. I mean, that's important. So talking about passing knowledge on, what helped you in your organizing efforts?
The FAO Berlin really gave us a lot of knowledge. We did a lot of workshops even with them to understand which are the rights that we have to claim, you know, because if you don't understand that, then it's kind of hard to fight for it. What we did is basically use this structure of having this. We called for three people to be the organizers of the first assembly. So these people get protection. They can't get fired. And we use these people to go to the warehouses and basically speak to all the workers about it and they can be fired. So it was fine. And now, and then afterwards, we use the Ballvorstand for that in a bit of more hidden way, of course, because it's an electoral council, but still. And then yet now with the workers' council, obviously, I think this focus on using these structures to try to make the working conditions better. I think it was our tool and our strategy. It was everything. At least in Germany, it's a good tool and it's a good structure to actually get to have something from these companies. You know, this is how it works, basically, I would say.
Yeah. Another thing that you talked about earlier in the first part of our talk was that you have these different groups in the workforce, also working in different warehouses and so on. So how did you deal with these possible boundaries between these different groups?
There is an instant connection when you speak the same language with some other person. I went to the warehouses to do one-on-ones with people and yeah, of course, it's an instant connection. People will trust you very, very easily, of course. So we luckily had a very variated group with a lot of different people when we were organizing, while organizing. So we tried to use that also as well. It depends a lot on the person and everything, but I would say, yeah, I think this is, it's a very important role, the language. It's very easy to connect with people like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another thing that came up when we talked about the platform economy for the first time in episode number 4 was related to the different opinions about unions workers might bring with them to Germany. I still remember that back then Ori Mittenmeier, whom we interviewed, said that some of the workers were really afraid to join a union because in their home country that might mean that they even are in danger, like to be killed or something like that. So in how far did that play a role for you at Gorillas, these different opinions about unions when you started organizing?
Yeah, I mean, at the very beginning, we had some help from the German unions. It was NGG, basically. But we didn't really obviously know. I mean, there's no trade unions where I come from. There's syndicates basically, but it plays a different role. It's something different here. So I had to also learn about it and kind of knew about the role and things. And then at some point, yeah, NGG said, hey, well, we're not really from your sector and Gorillas. And then kind of they give it out to Birdie. I don't think we started with the intention of creating something like this. I think it was just out of maybe being angry and wanted to do something about it. And then obviously knowing that we are the workers who actually are doing the things for them. And if we stop, they don't have anything, you know, like this basic concept of going to strike and we have the power, you know, but it's kind of hard to ask for a colleague to join a union when they've been here for 6 months. Like they didn't, why would I pay my part of my salary to this that most of the time they don't even speak English to you either. You know, they have like maybe a section that is for foreign people, but it's like one or two persons that it doesn't make much sense actually in this case particularly. But it's also, it took us some time to realize it, to be honest, because I think we wanted to work with them, but at some point it became really, really hard because we kind of did the work for them. We, as in, we did the organizing, we did our own workshops, and we informed ourselves of what we had to do for the election of the Wahlvorstand, for example, or the election afterwards from the Betriebsrat. And then they basically came and said, hey, well, we want to organize you, and these are done like this, and this is done like that. And we were like, hey, but we already know this. So what are you trying to do here? Like, you're just taking the credit for what we already done. So it felt for us as a group really wrong. And it's a personal experience, of course. I do think that there is obviously in greater industries, obviously there is a very powerful thing about the union, but I think it's also a tie to political things that mainly migrants don't even know about. And I don't know, it's way more complicated than just signing for something. There is obviously certain perks about joining a union, but I would say for migrants, it's not a thing. It's not interesting at all.
I would like to come back to Moritz now. And one question we asked ourselves, and that, yeah, we also kind of asked Gabriela, was this question, how different ideas about unions and understandings of unions and labor struggles in different countries, in different fields of work, how does that challenge organizing? And could it also be an advantage in that it makes for more innovative strategies and that people that, you know, they bring different ideas together and create new strategies?
Yeah, I get it. But maybe it's important to look at it from the other way around and start by acknowledging that unions, and especially big established unions, have had big problems in organizing platform workers, not only in Germany, but all across Europe. And I would say there's at least two major reasons for that. And the first one is the issue of self-employment, i.e. the labor model that is characteristic for platforms, or was especially in the early days. And it moves the employment relation outside of many established labor laws, outside of the industrial relations, and outside the way unions are used to do industrial relations. And Gorillas is almost an easy case in that respect, because you have these hubs where workers meet and they are employed. But if you look at Helpling, I've talked to people who've been working for Helpling for years as self-employed cleaners and have never met another person. And then the unions are obviously asking how to organize these workers, especially if you can't legally organize them because it's because they're self-employed. So that there's a huge problem there, and it's sort of the same issue in every country. And the big unions have had a hard time in finding new ways to organize and fight with self-employed workers. So grassroots unions have been more inventive here. And secondly, we do have the issue of migration, and Gabriela has raised a lot of points that it's a union needs to be attractive to mobile workforces, and you need to know why you should be there, even if you might switch your job or your country in an instance, basically. So there's also from the side of the unions, they feel that these workers are only there for a short amount of time. They can't be counted on to work long time in this Betrieb, and then form sort of a Betriebsgruppe there. So there's a sort of the double problem that unions can't make a good offer, and they feel that the migrant workers who move on very quickly are not a reliable core for a Betriebsgruppe. A lot of problems have been there, and the unions couldn't really answer to that. And this is the reason why the grassroots unions and the informal organizing and all these different traditions from people's backgrounds came into play and created such an interesting and innovative and often very radical way of struggle together, of challenge employees. But I'm also thinking that this is changing, and that the intensity of struggles has led to the acknowledgement in many unions, or at least for many people in many unions, that there need to be more inventive forms to organize with platform workers, that there need to be more inventive forms to organize with gig workers and migrant workers, and that there's new forms of counseling, of socializing and stuff is really necessary. We've been talking about the necessity to found worker centers for gig workers to really educate themselves and come together and start to organize. So we really need to sort of have a foundation and a sociality here, which needs to be created actively in the case of many platforms. And in an old school factory, you really had this. People were talking already. They all faced more or less the same problems and could talk to their neighbors. And in many platforms, you don't have this. There's a huge need to create this commonality and to find ways to talk to each other. And the structure of many unions is not really geared towards serving these needs, because they've been doing things differently for a long time.
Could you explain a bit more what you mean with the idea of worker centers, what that could look like in practice?
This is really not a plan or a finished idea, but more or less one of the things we've been talking about, looking at the different struggles in the different platforms in Berlin and elsewhere. And these struggles have been very, very intensive, but also sometimes very short-lived, and they failed to move to other platforms such as Helpling. And then the question is, how could you create spaces where platform workers also from different platforms meet and talk about their problems, find commonalities? Also, for most migrant platform workers, counseling is a huge issue. You need counseling on labor law, but also on migration law and housing law. And there's a big issue. And this could also be the start to organizing, because then in a situation of counseling, you actually see, okay, many people have the same problems. Not just me struggling with German bureaucracy, but there is maybe a structural issue here that we should address politically as well. And this can be a first step to organize. And something like this is also happening around guerrillas at the moment, but it could be more broadly and maybe more include more and different platform workers, and maybe a bit, these conflicts tend to flare up and then be very intensive, and then they move on, and then there's silence and it's flickering at another point. So we've been thinking about how to sort of also exchange the knowledge that is there and the strategies that are there to have a more longer ongoing organizing process that could broaden these struggles.
Just to pedal back a bit, I would also like to come back to your points from before, Gabriela. I mean, you voiced quite some disappointment with the DGB unions, and Moritz now has also pointed out that there are many people in these unions trying to come up with new strategies and adapt to new realities in the platform economy. So, yeah, there are things happening, which are, in my opinion, also moving in the right direction. But I think it's still very important to understand what might have gone wrong in your case. So what should the big units have provided or done differently from your point of view?
I mean, obviously, it would have been ideal that some of the strikes would have been taken under the wing of a DGB union, so our colleagues weren't fired, which actually happened, and some of them contested and were reinstated. So there is a little bit of a precedent, you know, like something that we actually did that we think can start be the change of this crazy law, I would say, because for me it's a bit, yeah, it's a bit crazy.
You mean the fact that for a strike to be legal in Germany, workers have to be called for the strike by a union, right?
Yeah, exactly. If you think about I don't know, yeah, France or other countries in Europe, that is, you just go for the strike. Basically, there is no, I mean, obviously there is some support of the union, I guess, but I don't think it's so determined in the law. So yeah, I think some support in that part would be ideal, but I think the problem was that. Yeah, Betty at least didn't want to be associated with the Gorillas Workers Collective because we have called for strikes and they don't want to be, obviously, be liable for that. They can actually get sued as well, of course. So yeah, there's there's more complicated things than just showing for support, which I think they did, but in a very patronizing way. Which for us was completely, we were a self-organized group and we had to figure out our things. And then they just come and say, well, yeah, look, this is how you do it. And we were like, but we already figured that out. So you can't really like kind of come over and try to help us. Or, I don't know. It was a bit weird. I have to say the relationship, it was a back and forth for a couple of months of things. And yeah, even if we are just migrants, workers that don't know much about German, you know. There's still some sort of anyways, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I guess it's also a question of ownership that played a role here and being taken seriously. Too bad that it went down that way. I mean, recent events have also shown that trade unions can organize workplaces with migrant workers in the platform or digital economy. There's, for example, this new works council with a Verdi majority now at TikTok in Berlin, for example. So, yeah, let's move on to another point that I wanted to ask you, Moritz. In your research, you also found out that there's kind of a downward spiral when it comes to the recruiting of workers for platforms. So whereas pay and conditions might be, in quotation marks, better in the beginning to attract workers, they deteriorate over the course of a longer period and then attracting more and more disenfranchised groups of people. One group of workers who are the most disenfranchised ones are, of course, undocumented migrant workers. And in one of your texts, you describe how they engage into forms of so-called account renting in order to be able to work on these platforms. So how does that look like exactly, and what are the problems connected to that?
Yeah, maybe this is also a good point to talk about the diversity of migrant workers and the category of migrant workers, because we've been talking about migrant workers as if they would all share the same circumstances and so on. When I've talked about the different factors in a migration regime, such as citizenship, visa, language, work permits, and so on, we already see that there's a lot of different situations, and somebody here working from Italy in a German platform has a completely different situation to somebody from Chile on a work and holiday visa, and again, different condition than somebody from India on another visa, and a different condition than somebody who's completely undocumented and can't work here legally, at least. And this is, of course, the most disenfranchised group of platform workers, which we find in different countries. In Germany, it's not so common, I think, but in French, Spanish, or Italian cities, you see a lot of undocumented workers. In some platforms there, it's actually the majority. And as these workers can't just start up an account with a platform, they need to rent it from other workers. And this can take different forms again. This can be their friends or members of their community who basically do it out of solidarity. Some writers here in Berlin, for example, I met, they shared their accounts if somebody had visa problems, and then you would just work with the account of somebody else. This is talking about self-employment here, of course. And then there's also more or less criminal networks organizing and account renting to undocumented migrants and then taking almost all of their income. And this is, of course, a very vulnerable position because you can't complain to the platforms, to the police, and there's very little you can do. And then surprisingly and amazingly, if you look, for example, to Paris, sans-papier writers have organized and together with a union and have done strikes and have had some success. Some of them got visas and there have been some changes in the policy. So even these workers are in fact able to fight and to actually have also some successes. And then there's on a much lower and less visible level. These workers are talking and exchanging tips and having sort of everyday practices of resistance. All the time there's exchange about the tricks, how to trick the algorithm, how to get this and that shift. So there's a high level of everyday struggle, I'd say, which is not visible, but also taking place. And amazingly, it also leads into bigger strikes and struggles also by these workers who don't have any or very little legal means to complain about platforms, subcontractors, and so on.
Talking about vulnerability and resistance, some of our listeners might have heard about union busting. We have talked about it in other episodes, and we've already mentioned it here too. It means the systematic and strategically planned suppression of collective organizing of workers. And Gabriela, you also faced such attacks by Gorilla's management, as far as we know. Could you give us some examples? What did it look like and what was your reaction? What was your strategy?
Wow. There's so many things. One of the clearest ones was the franchising model. There was just one single company called Gorillas Operations Berlin GmbH. But after we called up for elections of the Ballvorstand, they decided to split up the company and each warehouse would be their own company. And that means that the Betriebsrat that we just elected didn't have a Betrieb. So that's how they contested us in the court, basically saying that we are Betriebsrat for no Betrieb, which is still ongoing. I think they now put down the lawsuit. I'm not really sure at the moment, but that was like a clear union busting technique. And it happened in Starbucks. It happened in, I don't know, I think Amazon as well. It's very clear. And also, yeah, from wage theft, just not paying your workers, especially like when we were in the council, there were some of my colleagues and me, myself as well, that were not paid for the hours that we did. And we had to go to the court and contest it and so on. So obviously, yeah, when you don't have money to pay your rent, well, you are clearly very demotivated to keep organizing. From giving wrong information as well, just like deliberately lying to the workers. Well, yes, I would say there's many, many techniques. There's even books about it. Like it's crazy and it's very used and there's not much, to counter this union busting. It's how do you call it? A wrist fight. Yes. Who has more power? You know, which side push more? Yeah, I would say it's very scary that they have this power, you know, and then they can do basically or mostly whatever they want without a organized group that can actually counter that into the worker side.
If I can add to this quickly, because this is the interesting part about the gorilla situation last summer, that actually the gorillas workers were defending the right to have a Betriebsrat and the right to strike, like the basic sort of principles of social partnership in Germany. I think it's important to see how these platform companies are designed as an attack on principles of social partnership and workers' rights in Germany. And they started out with sort of self-employment, which is not, it's about denying some form of worker rights. It's about not paying workers when there are no jobs and so on. So it's a sort of laboratory for pushing back different forms of labor rights. And now this is often taking the form of union busting and new forms of temporary contracts and new forms of subcontracting. This is especially important in the case of Uber. So it's really important to see the dynamics of this field and also the strategic moves by these platforms and to find ways to counter them. And this is, I've said it, but it's the way why these movements by workers are so important. and why it's so important to pay attention to the different issues and how they come, because it's no coincidence that all these platform companies are against Betriebsräte and that they're trying to block these works councils. It's completely strategical and it's completely in their DNA.
So as the whole labor model, how you said, seems to be built on finding new loopholes and strategies to subject labor, we might also have to come back to the strategies to withstand this race to the bottom, so to say. So what should trade unions do to be more effective and develop more power in the platform economy, in your opinion?
That's a lot of things. I mean, it's also a bit boring. We have been bashing big unions a lot, and maybe we should also talk about good people there. And I think there's a lot of movement and discussions going on, and there's obviously a huge challenge how to answer to these companies now. And we've talked a lot of many issues have been raised already. There's the issue of self-employment and how to organize with self-employed workers who do not fit in our understanding of self-employed and who are in many cases false self-employed, but still there and who need to be fighting and who need to be organized in some ways which are not the traditional way of a Betriebsgruppe. And then there's the issue of migrant workers and especially of very mobile migrant workers. And I think there's also a lot of stuff happening and also in DGB initiatives such as Faire Mobilität and BEMA in Berlin. There's a lot of knowledge already there, which sort of counseling unnecessary, which sorts of legal supports are necessary, which ways to get together, to socialize and to set up sociality, to start fighting. And these different things. There's experiences, but I think there's an sort of need to find ways to do them continuously, and then also to find, of course, ways to finance the unions by new forms of membership. And in this, there's of course a new type and a new image of the union member that needs to be created in the present. While there's, of course, a lot of the so-called old industries that are still there and need to be catered for and so on. So I think this is a very complex process. But I think many of the recent struggles in the platform economy actually are showing some ways how to do it. And this also involves, in my opinion, to be a bit more radical, a bit more inventive, and to take a few more risks than the traditional social partnership here.
Now, we already started to talk about what should be changed, what could be changed, and what needs to be changed, looking at the struggle of gig workers and the importance of the migrant labor in the labor in this field. Moritz, what do you think, what changes and reforms are necessary to improve the situation when it comes to the legal system in Germany and on a European level?
So the interesting point we've talked about already is that it's a very dynamic field and it is in movement, and the very core of the gig economy, the model of self-employment or independent contracting, is under attack heavily politically and publicly. There's stuff happening in many different European courts. The European Union is trying to outlaw at least some forms of solo self-employment, especially in Korea's work. So I think the industry and the gig economy is already changing and moving on to new forms of subcontracting, of short-term, temporary and other precarious contracts. So also I think the field of struggle is changing a bit. And maybe we are also arriving at a point where the platforms need to be contextualized more in the landscape of precarious labor they exist in, because they are not very different to many neighboring industries, low-paid industries, where also like the majority of workers is migrants, and where many of the issues are quite similar. So maybe the challenge will be to address the landscape of precarious labor as a whole, and not so much talking about these exceptional American or whatever platforms, but about the way the low-wage sector here is structured, and about the way all workers in this sector can be empowered. And then we're talking, for example, about minimum wages and about other forms of outlawing precarious and contingent labor. And maybe, yeah, we need to move a bit away from the platform sector as the scandalous exception that needs to be fought back against, which is true in some point, and address the issue of precarity and exploitation in this forms of low wage sector, not only in the service sector but also in logistics and many other sectors as a whole. And this is of course then a very big struggle and challenge for the years to come, but I think this is one of the issues we need to start discussing about.
It's a very interesting point, I think. Lots of food for thought here. Unfortunately, we can't discuss longer now. So as we are coming to an end now, also last question to you, Gabriela. What is the current situation of the Gorillas Workers Collective and what are your future plans?
Yeah, I think at the moment we try to bring new people in to create also a much solid base of what are the actual purpose of this group. So it's some sort of restructuration, I would say. I'm not really sure if it's in the best of the shapes. I think there was part of our members that wanted to also like go further and create also more sort of like a writing unions, for example, across the platform with the from Lieferando board, so on and so on. And now, I don't know if you ever also, for example, Getir had a work selection and we also help there and so on and so on. So I think it's a base now to help workers in a more general way. But I think there's a lot of efforts into that. And I don't know if there is the actual resources or human resources to actually be able to do that at the moment. There's a lot of burnouts, of course, and I would say that hopefully there's a brighter future and more like a direction and more objectives to go for. We will see what the future brings.
Yes, talking about the future, I think the very recent cases of union busting at Lieferando and Flink highlight the need to keep organizing and also to show solidarity with workers in the platform economy. Even more since we learned today that the working conditions of migrant labor in the platform economy should really be understood as a laboratory for pushing back workers' rights in general. Which role will the big, often called traditional unions play in this? How can the tensions between spontaneous struggles under precarious conditions and long-term oriented organizations with powerful but also sometimes slower working structures be resolved? We started this discussion with our episodes on organizing and will continue in our next episode, which will be in German, with Ben Luig. Ben is the coordinator of the Fair Mobility Project for the construction and agricultural sector, dealing with migrant employees, for example, the seasonal workers harvesting Germans' holy treasure, asparagus.
Yeah, and also joining us for the next episode is sociologist Lisa Carstensen, who has done extensive research on the issue of migrant labor and trade unions and has recently co-edited a book on migrant organizations and trade unions in West Germany in the 70s and 80s. For this episode, thank you, Gabriela and Moritz, for sharing your insights and experiences with us. It was really a pleasure. And thank you to our listeners, to you. We are happy to receive comments and questions at our email address, podcast@fnpa.eu. And you can also follow us on Twitter @demoworkpod. Before we end, two events we want to highlight and that you can still sign up for. On September 16th and 17th, the conference Gute Arbeit in der Transformation, Decent Work in Transformation takes place at the TU Berlin. So check out the show notes for the program and to find out how to sign up. And another conference on October 1st and 2nd, the autumn conference of the German sister of the US Labor Notes will also take place in Berlin. Organisieren, kämpfen, gewinnen. That's the name of the group, is inviting workers and labor activists to share experiences and learn from each other, to connect within and across sectors in different workshops and also in panels. To my knowledge, there will even be a workshop about the platform economy that will take place in English there. More about that also in the show notes.
And that's it from us for now. Make sure to tune in next month again for our episode on migrant labor and trade unions. Bye bye.
Macht's gut.
Democratized Work is a podcast project of the Kooperationsstelle Wissenschaft und Arbeitswelt of the Technical University Berlin and the Forum Neue Politik der Arbeit.